When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Mum and Mama podcast, brought to you as always by Golding Accountancy. We are golding.com for all your accountancy needs. I'm recording this on Friday, so I'm currently sitting here watching Storm Eunice work its way through my garden. I've had to get my cat in because he was very freaked out. I'm not going to let him back out, even though he wants to go out, because I think he thinks that there's loads of mice and stuff in the grass where it's shaking around so much. But obviously it's just the wind panda. He's looking very confused. Anyway, hi. Thank you for listening. If this is your first time, and Amber, the lovely Amber, who's my guest today from the bosom, has brought you here, then welcome. Thank you for listening. I've got loads of other episodes. This is actually 101, so there are 100 other episodes where I talk to all different types of people about all different types of things. So have a look through my back catalogue. The lovely Amber, for those of you who don't know, my friend Nicole brought her to my attention because she found her when she was going through a healing. And she said to me that she makes her feel better every morning and see the world more positively. And I thought, what an amazing gift for someone to give someone else, the ability to see the world as a better place. So I thought, I've got to have her on the podcast. So I did. And this is our chat, and I do hope you enjoy it. Bye.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Work. Work.
So I've started so many podcasts by saying this, but my friend Nicole, so she put me on to you, okay. And when I told her that I was doing the podcast with you, she got a bit emotional. Aww. Because she said that you have made her
I mean, she's gone through a lot of stuff, but she was like, you make her see her day differently.
Aww.
And make her happier. Aww. And I was like, when she told me, I was like, that's such a lovely, isn't that a lovely thing?
Yeah.
To know that you've improved someone's life.
100%.
On a day-to-day.
So, yeah.
So, hi, Amber.
Hi. Hi, Amy. Thank you. That's taken me aback a bit, because you just don't know who you're affecting, especially with social media now. You just don't know, like, some people do speak up, some people don't. And, like, sometimes, you know, I'm aware, like, okay, there's one of me trying to remember things, remember names, remember faces. I'm great at faces. I'm rubbish at names. Because of the type of work I do, sometimes I don't look on people's pages purposefully, so that I'm not, in case they do want to come to me for work, I like to keep it quite neutral. Yeah. That's really nice to know. Thank you for sharing.
That's all right. Well, that's a nice thing to hear, isn't it? Yeah. I have to tell you. So, Amber from the bosom.
Yes.
So, how did you get to where you are now?
As a businesswoman or?
Well, just in life, I guess, really. Where are you from?
I'm from West London originally. I'm from West London, but I've lived lots of places. I've lived between, we grew up half of our life here, and then my mum took us out to Buckinghamshire, and then we moved to, in those times I've lived all over the country. I've lived in France, I've lived in America, I've lived everywhere. So, I've lived in a few places. So how did I get here? Good question.
What were you into when you were younger?
Oh, God, what was I into? Everything and nothing is the best way to answer that question. I grew up in domestic violence. Let's start there. I have to start. The trauma is how I got here, because my thing has always been that no matter what I've been through, I've always smiled through it. And I remember that from as young as I can remember. I just remember always being, and sometimes it was being made to, because that was kind of my role in family dynamic, which was a broken, weird family dynamic, but yeah, it was to be the happy one, and I was naturally that. But then naturally also, when you're witnessing violence and abuse, you don't always feel like that, but I didn't, there was no place for that to be addressed or known. So that's how I got here, because I just realised that was like my superpower, to just sort of plough through and find joy in the crap. So what I was into
Are you an only child?
I was until, and everyone always picks that up, I was until I was nine, I think eight or nine. So I feel like, and then I was like parentalised from quite young, so I didn't have the same upbringing that my brothers had. They had a full-on childhood, and I felt I was quite grown up and mature. Too early, far, far too early. So,
well, you had to be.
Yes.
So was it your father?
Yeah. My dad was...
And how long... how old were you when they separate? I'm assuming that...
Yeah, they're not together. No, they're not together. Yeah. I'm going to put this here. I think nine when it kind of really went. My brothers were, so I must have been eight and nine when my brothers were born. Yeah, so my brothers were one and two.
So is it the same dad?
Yeah. So my mum my mum didn't think she was going to have any more after me, due to the circumstances. Yeah. And then she fell pregnant back to back with my brothers. They're a year and 2 weeks apart. So it was,
Irish twins. Yeah. Oh, no, they're not quite.
Not quite, but yeah, basically. Yeah. They had my mum left once my brothers sort of came into the mix of things, so because they were so close together, so she left at what she left when she just had my second brother, with no intention to return, and then had to return because of circumstances of my dad finding us, and then she left.
Where
pretty
did you
much
go? Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember everywhere that I went, pretty well most. That time we went to High Wycombe. And then before that, then my mum left, and she had to leave us with the intention the police were going to collect us, and it took them 10 months to do so. So she was without us for a long time, me and my youngest brother.
Oh my God!
Yeah, so she went to Cornwall, and then that's when we moved to Cornwall, and then we moved back to Buckinghamshire. So, yeah, quite a harrowing, amazing story.
Fucking hell.
It's a lot. So, yeah, so we, that was when my mum left. My mum left when I was 9, yeah. And then I went back to my mum when I was 10. And yeah, from then it was, then he wasn't, he was in our life, like in and out, but not with my mum sort of initiating that. It would be him just kind of turning up or finding out where we live or whatever. But my mum just changed as a woman. She found her voice, she found her power. So he couldn't do what he used to do. He would attempt it, but he soon learned she wasn't that woman anymore. So yeah, my mum was a single mum for all of my life, because even when they were together, she was very much the caregiver, she was the one who did everything for me. And then obviously when my brothers come, it was just mainly us, apart from that little moment when they were first tiny. So from that, I brought that up because she's asked, what was I into? I didn't really have an opportunity to be into things. Yeah. I loved acting once I got older, but I know for sure, like, the thought, like, I can feel my inner child, and the thought of having to walk into a room and be, like, outgoing was quite daunting, because I was always the new girl, I was always the new person, because of how much we used to move and go to refuges and stuff, so I was outgoing, but it definitely came in my teens, where I found sort of some stability with that. But the one thing that has been my consistent, which has now become a part of my services, which is called Wild Grace, is dancing. I've danced my way through all my pain, everything. So dancing's always been my thing, and that's varied from, like, loving dance classes, loving being a part of a chorus, being in musical theatre, going to drama school, and then just going out with friends and kicking it and having fun and dancing. Like, dance is like my staple of everything, healing my joy, my happiness. So dance was like my thing, but not to a level of where I got to do it consistently as a child, like in classes and things. But I would go, my mum would take me when she could, but I didn't have like a dance school I was part of, but that was like my dream, to go to Sylvia Young's. so that was my interest.
So how did you get into this more spiritual? Have you always been quite spiritual?
I would say yes and no. No, because I've always been, I didn't know what I believed in, but I believed in something. I remember going to church once and just sort of turning around, and as you can imagine with what I've shared about my father, is that he was quite a scary guy. He was lovely, like, and charming when he was lovely, don't get me wrong, but I remember turning around to him and saying, don't take me there again. And he never did. There was no questions, there was nothing said. I just remember it was very just something, I think it was the first time I stood in my power, probably, or remember standing in my power. I just didn't like the vibration of churches, and now I can go to churches and appreciate the beauty, but that feeling is still there. So I never believed in like a God. I didn't believe in the man in the sky. I didn't particularly believe in Jesus. I just didn't believe in like the Christian faith. And to be honest, my parents never imposed their beliefs on me. Like, my dad's I think changed his religion a few times. And my mum, I don't really remember my mum ever really imposing God on us as like a reason not to do things or a reason to do something. She was just always very like, what feels right. And then obviously in other parts, I think she was just preoccupied with what her life was like to even think of those things. Yeah. But as I got to my 20s, when I was 16, my mum became very curious with like cards, and my mum had always read playing cards for people, just like her friends and stuff, secretly. But I didn't know about this. This is obviously something that used to happen when I used to go to bed or something, because I never remember seeing that. But actually, it was my dad who told me many years later that your mum used to read the cards for me, and he told me like something that she had like said, and then it came true. And I remember my dad, as an insult, calling my mum a witch. And I never used to really understand. And it's funny because it's funny to say it, because I'm thinking of why. But I was like, why would he call her witch? And my mum, he broke my mum's nose. So I thought maybe it was because of the crooked nose. Like, you know, you're innocent as a child.
Yeah.
So I never understood why he meant that. And then when my mum became curious, when I was about 16, with her family, her cousins and good friends at the time, there was just things that were going on in the house. And I always felt spirit. I always knew something was there. Sometimes it felt protective, but some of the stuff that happened when I was younger used to feel quite dark and just unsettling. So I'd be a bit scared. And I remember things like dreams being very prophetic for me as a kid, but wouldn't know that now. Like, I still have dreams that I remember from that time that were like protecting me, if you like. And the boogeyman, like just things that were like normalized in the world. I genuinely was having experiences, but didn't know what that was. So then when I became 16, I had a spirit walk through me in the woods, and luckily I was with people, so it wasn't just me like thinking it and is this happening in my head. My mum was there, and the best friend at the time witnessed it, and I couldn't speak. Like, I couldn't speak. I felt like my tongue had been completely cut out, and I was just like, just couldn't breathe properly, but also could. It was just the strangest experience, and it was like as quick as it happened, it was done. But it made me sort of like keel over and be like, oh my god, like I was so exhausted. And my mum and her and my friend at the time were like, what just fucking happened? Oh my god, like we just couldn't get over it. And I just had this name, Florence, in my head. And just like a real sense of like someone was really grateful, really, really grateful. And so what had happened was that my mum and her cousin and her friend had recently gone over there, and she had picked up that there was a cult that was there, a sexual cult from the 1600s. We lived in one of the oldest villages in Buckinghamshire. So it's very old, very, very old. And she felt that there had been like something going on between men and women in the woods. Now these woods, they would have like enough wildlife, I think, to make it function as a woods, because obviously if there's no wildlife, then it's not going to work. Like they're part of the ecosystem of it. But you did like never used to see birds, really. You never really see these wildlife that were in there. You knew they were there, but that you never saw them. And it was like a lovely tiny woods, but you'd never even see like one little squirrel or anything. Like, but you would know that something was there because you could hear little clicks and stuff, but you wouldn't see anything. And so this day that we walked, Mum said, like, come, because like all the animals are there. Like, I'm seeing so many animals there after not seeing. So they had gone there and they had done like what we would call now like a clearing, and they had passed over those spirits. And my mum's cousin had felt that their tongues had been cut up, so they couldn't speak about what had happened to them. So that was what my mum didn't tell me that, because she was kind of, it was just between her and her cousins, but she wanted me to come to the woods. And then this thing happened, and she was like, oh my god, your tongue was, it was like your tongue was gone. And that was, you know, basically I had her walk through me. So it was kind of confirmed like what my aunt had seen. Well, she's my mum's cousin, but I call her my aunt, had seen. I then experienced it in a physical. I didn't like that, so I made it very clear, like, as much as I respect it, and I know she was grateful for, like, she was basically just saying thank you, but she wanted it, I think, to be tangible for me to know that it was real and it wasn't just in my head. And so from then I always used to see butterflies, and I'd always know it was her, and she used to come, the butterflies used to come straight to my window and just flirt. That's the only way I can describe it. Like, they had all of, my mum had a beautiful garden, so there was no need to be up at my mum's windows. And so they would come, and I would always like just feel this presence of her, and I'd always smell flowers. So that's kind of like, that was how I started being intrigued. It took me a long time after that, because that was quite a big, impactful experience. And then there was other bigger ones. And, you know, I was a teenager, I had done the Ouija board in my mum's house without telling her, and I only told about her about that like in my late 20s. I was like, yeah, so you know when we had that spirit. So yeah,
what happened when you did it? I've never done that.
Nothing really happened other than like it did move, and you know we was all questioning like, was it us? Is it like in our heads? But what did happen is around that same time that the thing happened with Florence, the spirit in the woods, my mum's in a curious space, and she felt she had, when we lived in Cornwall, part of the reason she left was because she missed her family and everything, but also another part was because the house just felt it was extremely haunted. You used to have shelves, and like my mum used to put her egg cups up on her shelf, and they used to just fly off and like hit you on the head when you was like washing up, and it was like a joke. And all of like the people of Cornwall are quite in touch with that thing. Not necessarily where like it's necessarily like, I can't really describe it. It's very subtle how they're in touch with it, but they're not scared of it. So they're like, oh yeah, it's probably just John. And they'll just like laugh it off, like very oldie worldy there. So no one was really like making a big thing of it, but my mum was like, so my granddad is a psychic, and my granddad used to get my mum after he'd like had a hard day, whether it was doing whatever, but he used to get my mum to put her hand on his head and say, you're the only one that can, you know, heal my head, kind of thing. And she said, I remember doing it, and then he'd be like, okay, that's enough, and it would go. But she said no one used to like nurture that, no one used to say like what that was. She said as she got older, she just thought it was like his way of being like nice to his daughter and like making her feel special. But then she started realizing she did have healing hands. So when she lived in Cornwall, she kept having this experience with a particular man. So we had a psychic come around to clear the house. They cleared him, and the house did feel like a different house. But basically, it turned out there was a history of a man who had hung himself over the banister in our house. And when you used to walk over it, it was a weird staircase, kind of like a small spiral in a square. It was a very interesting house. So when you used to walk where he'd hung himself, when you walked up there was just like this, you'd feel a bit apprehensive. Everyone who was there would feel apprehensive to walk past, because obviously you're walking past where he had done this act. So once that was happened, I remember like, I was 11, but I remember feeling like the house felt different. My mum felt different. My mum was happier. And then she made the decision to move back closer to London to be near her family. So that spirit was gone. So when we did the Ouija board, we brought that spirit back, and he came into the house, and he lived under the staircase. And my mum was just like on it, like there's something not right. That feeling that I had in Cornwall was back. And so her and her friends did that. And we had a cat that we had bought from Cornwall, which literally just turned up in our house one day. It was like this feral cat, and it never left. And it was like the cats in, obviously in Cornwall, because they got fish at their disposal, they're huge. Cats in Cornwall are like literally like massive beasts. So he was huge, and we brought him up here. And the day that they cleared this energy out of the house, I remember this horrible feeling of like, it was like a man was screaming feeling. And then my mum's friend, she used to have what happened to me where it's called mounting, where a spirit can come into your body. And when that happened, her voice it was horrible. Me and my friend we were sitting on the kitchen side, we jumped up and we ran upstairs, because it was so, what the hell was that? Like, that was not her voice, that's not her anymore. And the cat screeched and ran out the house, and he never came back to our house. And he died about 10 years later. And he went and lived across the road, because these old ladies used to sometimes pet him. So he went, he started living in that house. He never came back into our house after that moment. So little things like that used to happen. And yeah, so that's what kind of led the curiosity. So doing things like just being a kid and doing it, it was all like nothingness. Like, I would do that and then completely forget about it and be obsessed with boys or be obsessed with makeup or be like, it wouldn't be like an everyday. So that's the kind of no side of it. And then the yes side of it is that, yeah, I just always had a knowing, and I've always felt very telepathic with my mom. And she, you know, once we kind of got out of our own ways and she started sharing stuff that she had gone through when she was young, we had all these mirroring stories and we had very much the same way of thinking. But for the whole first sort of 21 years of my life, it was like that was a secret her and I had a secret me, yet we were so close, yet we had these feelings with spirit and used to have lots of whisperings in my ear at night before going to bed, and I would feel the presence of like pressure on my bed and pressure on my chest and certain things. And then so once we was like, right, let's go for it, so I let my mum lead me on it. She kind of went into it full throttle first, and I went to a few workshops and a few things, and then I just kept getting the message from people like, you need to master this, like, you're very powerful, you're an indigo child, you're this, you're that, you're crystal child, you're this, you're that. And I was a bit overwhelmed, but then I just started feeling really led from like the manifestation movement of like The Secret, those kind of books, felt really drawn to them, and then getting to the history of them, and then being like, right, I don't need those versions of the book, I need the older versions of the book. And I started realizing like, all of this is one thing, all of this is like, magic is spiritual, spiritual is psychic, psychic is spiritual, and it was all the same. And then I started mastering like, oh, I don't have to have spirits press up on me all the time, I don't have to have them talking in my ear before bed, I can actually call the shots on this a bit more than I thought. I was very scared of it, very, very scared of like it. But I used to go to like, I'd just be random to my friends, like, should we go to a spiritualist church? And they'd be like, you're so weird, why? And I'd be like, let's just go and see if they choose us. And I just had like this intrigue. But then, like I said, I could go back to being like obsessed with the boy that was like unrequited love within a day. It was so weird. And so once I left drama school, I was acting here and there. I was working, you know, in schools here and there just to kind of like help with the finances of that. And I was just really unhappy, really, really unhappy. And then I decided my mum, so something happened in my family where my mum had to go to prison. And she went to prison when I was like 20, just turning 25. And I was just like, during that time, it was very painful, it was very weird, it was very hard. And I just kind of didn't want to do anything to do with being conventional. I just wanted, I'm an Aquarian, and if that means anything to you, like, I'm just very rebellious, but not where I want to cause a fuss. I'm not the type to be like, right, let's go and do madness. But I'm a no person. Like, if I don't want to do something, I'll say. And I was at that point, I was a people pleaser, so I was learning what that meant. So then I started getting into sort of this self-love movement of things and that side of spiritualism. And yeah, that was where Moonchild Indigo, which was my first business, that's how that happened. And now we're here with The Bosom. So yeah, it was a journey. It wasn't fluid, and it wasn't always. And it was funny because I'm trying to think of a funny reel to do at the moment for my Instagram of like, how do you show like the truth of spiritualism? Because people just think it's this whole kumbaya thing, and like monks and people wearing white all the time. And don't get me wrong, there is that side of it, and it's like, there's the tradition of it, there is, but spirit being spiritual is just being. And so I just kept getting told like that was kind of how I was to address the matter by spirit, like, just be, don't necessarily. At first it was all like, when, because no one was talking about this stuff, I was part of a foundation that was being built online. I was, you know, there's people that I know that have gone on to have like massive followings from that, but I was part of the groundwork, and I recognize that now on reflection. Like, there was pages that were talking about this stuff, and there's nothing new under the sun, it's not to say, but this resurgence of everyone starting to look at themselves a bit more, I played my role in that, and that was to just start being and sharing. So I would share knowledge that was like, right, why do we have a salt bath? Why do we do this? Why do we do that? But slowly that all started to fizzle out of not being part of my purpose. It was more just like showing people like, you're a girl from London, you swear, you know, you've had a child, and you're not with, you know, you're not in a relationship with that man. You talk about soul ties, you talk about situationships, but be a human being who makes what someone might consider a mistake, but you see as like the best change in your life or the best experience that led you back to you. So yeah, it's an interesting
journey. Did you find a change in yourself after becoming a mother?
Yeah, massively. I went through a whole new awakening. You know, you hear a lot of language of like, I'm going through awakening, there's an ascension process, there's ascension symptoms, there's awakening symptoms. And I thought that when I first started doing this, I thought, okay, there's one big awakening and then that's it. You're kind of just on this road. No, there's awakenings within awakenings within awakenings. And motherhood, well, just like pregnancy alone, that becoming a mother. Yeah, I remember when I found out, and I said to my friend, I came out and I was like holding the stick and I was like, I'm gonna be a mom. And she was like, she's a New Yorker, so she's like, girl, she's like, you better fucking remember that you just said you're gonna be a mom, girl. You didn't say you're pregnant, you said you're gonna be a mom. And I was like, oh my god, I did, yeah. And so, yeah, I was a mum from the minute I found out. And I found out at 2 weeks that I was 2 weeks pregnant. I was tiny. It was nothing. And I just, that was it. I was a different person. And it was very surreal to feel so changed in a moment to moment to then changing again and again and again. Like, I'm going through a new change within the motherhood now where there's been a few getting back into myself, meeting the new version of myself, integrating the old parts of myself, letting go of the old parts. So I'm going through a new phase now where I've just recently, become part of a modeling agency and I've just come back from a trip to Manchester yesterday for the event. And that is like surreal. Like, it's the first time I stayed away from Aretha where I am not like in the same city as her. Like, she stays away from me. She goes to her dad's all the time. But me being somewhere else, and like, that was like, I had to sit with that for a minute yesterday, like, whoa, I have time. I don't have to think about someone else because there's nothing I can do if anything happens. I'm 2 hours away. Like, that surrendering to like, what does that mean for me as a mother? What does that mean for me as Amber? And it's been, The motherhood one has been the one that has really grounded in who I am and that I'm allowed to consistently and constantly change, because I do. You know, sometimes I'm fiercely protective of like it all, and I remember like how I was when I first had her, so different. The only part that with me that had brings a little bit of sadness at times is like it was just so simple when she first came. It was just about getting up, deciding what to do. There was no pressure. Whereas now that I've become back to being a businesswoman and a mum, feels like a lot more pressure.
But did you feel because I always think that is, when you first have a baby, it's all very overwhelming, obviously because it's all new.
Mm-hmm.
But really all you do is just feed them, change them. I mean, if you've got a good baby who just sleeps and eats
and doesn't really
do much, you know, it's... You just go and have coffee and have cake and moan about your partner to your mate. Do you know what I mean? But it all seems really a lot. But actually, that's the easy bit. It's when they start moving around and walking and talking and, you know.
Yeah.
Everything brings its own problems. But I didn't appreciate the easiness of the early stuff at the time.
Definitely.
It's only now when I think, oh.
Yeah. And I think as well, it doesn't help, like, oh, it's kind of a rock and a hard place, because I had one friend who was like, she kind of literally sort of blurted, no one told me about this, you didn't tell me this, like this part. And I was like, I don't know how you tell someone without sort of ruining their, like preempting them of what happened. And I very much like had a pregnancy where I was sick every day, I was nauseous every day, it was horrible. I really didn't enjoy pregnancy. I had a really foreign experience. And when you're someone like, my mum said after I had my daughter, she was like, I felt so sorry for you, she said, because it must have been so horrible to be a horrible person. And I laughed. I was like, do you realize what you just said? And she went, yeah, but I mean it. She was just like, you were just so horrible. She was like, I knew why. And I just, she said, I never, like, she was so good with me. She's like, I never felt like, she said, I feel like I need to get away from her today. But she said, I never felt like, oh God, why are you being like this? She said, I just constantly understood, like, she's just not herself. Like, she's just, or this version of herself is not someone that she would always be. It's very temporary. And yeah, that felt horrible. And, you know, then when you're the one who's, don't get me wrong, I loved how I looked. I loved how people treated me whilst I was pregnant. Like, it's, you're just a goddess. Like, people just adore you and it's really nice. But the way I felt inside was like, I just want to vomit over you all and just like make you feel what I'm feeling. And I was just horrible. Yeah. And so, you know, the pregnancy was quite stressful. And that then, so that was such a relief when then I had her. And yeah, you just feel, I don't know, it's just such a journey. It's such a, like, you look back and then everybody's telling you like, oh, just enjoy these moments, that go so fast, but that's the last thing you want to hear. But then I have my friend, like I said, who's like, you didn't tell me this part. And I'm like, oh, I didn't, I was the person who didn't want to know, so I wouldn't ever impose that on someone. And I actually found it quite irritating when people are like, not so much suggesting things, but just that unwarranted, like, giving your, like, oh, well, that was your experience with your child, you know, like, I don't, people, a lot of people come to me about sleep training, and I'm like, literally, I have a baby who likes to sleep. Yes, there was a few awkward nights, but I don't know if that would work for you on a long term with your baby who's, you know, not having the best experience with sleep, doesn't enjoy sleep, has an overactive mind, if you like, or just doesn't, and they're just cool with a little bit of sleep. I didn't have that experience, but I was like, I think because I lucked out, because I was sick through the pregnancy. So, you know, we all have our things, and no one had any advice for me.
I've never thought about that, actually, because my pregnancies were awful, but my babies were really good.
Yeah.
And I never thought, oh, maybe that's, I suffered first.
Yeah, that's what I was like. I was like, oh my God, is this, and my mum was like, no, look at her. She sleeps in your belly. So she used to, how she sleeps now is how she slept when she was in my tummy. Like, that's the beauty, that's something that I really love, is that who she was in my tummy is who she is now. It's insane. Like, I can't believe you can know someone without, well, you can't be more intimate with someone. Like, you're literally, they're inside of you. But that fascinates me, that still to this day I can think of times where I felt she was being cheeky in my tummy, and she's cheeky like that in real life. Or, you know, she was always into dancing. When I put music on, she would be kicking, and to the point I bought her earbuds for her, for the belly. It was such a cute little thing, and she loved it. And now she still dances to the songs I played her. It's just like, that fascinates me. Like, that's just, that blows my mind. So, yeah, it's a interesting, it's interesting being a mother. It's very, very much changed me, 100%.
So how long have you been a single mum for? Have you always been a single mum?
Always. Like, it's a hard one to answer that question, because I'm like, I am a single mum, but I have a lot of help. My mum is on hand all the time. My brothers are very much in my life. My brother is the main babysitter, bless him. Like, he doesn't do as much with his evenings, and so he's always like, listen, go and get your life. He's always so lovely. He's like,
that's nice.
Go out, do whatever. And
I think it's really important for children as well to have a lot of people. What is it? It takes a village.
Yeah,
I think that is so. And I think, well, that's one good thing. If you're fortunate enough to have a supportive network of people around you, I think that's one good thing about being a single parent.
Yeah.
You do need to rely on other people 100%. To help. That means, which is the kids' lives.
Because a lot of women come to me like saying, you know, they're inspired. But the difference is that they haven't got the unit, and I can't speak on that. So sometimes brings, I no longer hold guilt about it, but at first I would feel very strong in like, no, don't call yourself a single mum, because there's other women out there. And, you know, I co-parent with her dad. Her dad is like a brilliant dad, very hands-on. And yeah, like very much just part of the unit, but just, we're just not together, you know? Yeah. So it doesn't feel like I'm a single mum fully, but then there are moments where it's top heavy on me and I'm like, this is definitely a single mum shit, and I'm exhausted and I'm feeling fucked and I'm feeling tired, and everything and everyone is irritating me, even the people that help me the most or the people that I can ask for more help from. But it's just because mind-wise, you're always having to think for someone else. And that is like, that's something that no one, I think there's so many parts of motherhood that no one wants to talk about because they feel guilty, and it's just silly. Like, for me, it's silly. Like, I'll talk about it. I'm happy to be that person. Like, I'm not slating motherhood at all, but because I love it. But it's not even that it's just not easy, because there are parts in it that are easy. And I think I always said when I first had Aretha, it's a choice to be a parent. You can be someone's mother or father, but to be their actual parent and their mummy and their daddy, there's choices that you have the choice not to make if you want to. If you want to do the bare minimum and just, you know, feed your kids, clothe your kids, get them into bed in a routine, you could do that. But if you're not going to do all the loving parts, all of the things, like, I'm not really into play dates. Like, I have to push myself. But now I do them. I'm making friends, but it's because I didn't want to meet strangers. I just wanted to do it with my pals, but all my pals are spread out everywhere. So it took a little while for me to find people around me that are close by where I can just say, oh, it's Friday, and it's not this big rigmarole of like whole day planned out. We're just gonna go out for a couple hours and whatever, and bounce. But I live in Ealing, which is very yummy, yummy mummy central. So if we've got any Ealing mummies listening, but sometimes it just feels like it's not very me. It's not very my vibration, and I'm hyper independent, and that's not always understood. If you're someone who's a mum who's completely dependent on being a mother, I'm not that mum for you. We won't vibrate the same, because I don't just have a goal just to be a good mum. That's just the standard. That's just like my choice was a minimum. Like, I will be a great mom, and that's it. But I'm also going to be me. And I don't ever let anything sacrifice Aretha's well-being for that. But sometimes my things do get sacrificed, and I get pissed off about that. I'm not pissed off at Aretha. I'm not even necessarily pissed off at myself. It's just like I think it's just normal. I think even if you don't have kids, when you have to sacrifice sometimes, you really don't want to, but it is for the betterment of everyone. You're allowed to feel like negative sort of emotions until you kind of recognize, okay, I'm over it, we move, what's next, kind of thing, you know? I like to think of myself, even though it's overused, but like a real woman. I just like to think of myself as authentic as possible. And I don't love it all, but I love being a mum, but I don't love it all. I don't love every part of it, you know?
So tell us about your company then, your business, The Bosom.
The Bosom.
How did it come around?
My mum has ADHD, so that's a big factor. She was diagnosed 2-3 years ago now. I think it was 2 years. I think it was just before everything happened in the panic. So my mum is very spontaneous, very just all of a sudden wants to do things, and that can be from deciding she wants to go do a post office run randomly when we've decided to sit down and chill, to going, I've seen this building and I think we should get it. they rent these spaces, I think we should do it. And so we went and saw one building. It was at the top of our road, and it did feel a bit too good to be true. I'm still coming back for that building, but it was amazing, huge. And we was thinking of ways, and then I've always been about community, and it's not to say my mum hasn't, but my mum has always been about progression, if you like. And, you know, she's done some things, as you can tell from her story is very much my story, but she has her own version of that. And she's had a really amazing, colourful life, which to some people seems negative, but to her, it's, you know, she's healed from that and forgave herself, and we've forgiven her, and all those kind of things factor in. So when she got puts her mind to it now, she does everything, and she's been through so much that I think she just wants to like just try it all. So she's a big part of my goal setting. So we with that combined, I was like, well, if we do this, I want this to be community led. I don't want this to just be like ours, in the sense of whatever it progresses to, it has to be either helping the community, literally the immediate community, or the community that we've built online, and that, you know, people have their factoring in. And we just had these really expansive ideas about what it was. And as a joke, she was just like, what should we call it? And I don't know why she said the bosom, but I was like, that's it. She's like, we're not calling it the bosom. She's like, no. She's like, because my mum's, she's very tongue-in-cheek, a big joker, big personality. but she's kind of prudish at the same time in ways. And if she hears me say that, she'd be like, no, I'm not. But she is. Like, she gets a bit shy about that kind of stuff. So she's like, we can't call it that. And I was like, no, like, what is the bosom? So I looked up the meaning, and it was like ample chest, the woman's, you know, ample chest. And I was just like, that to me, like, the bosom is always in my mind. It's never been, it's the, probably the only word that doesn't feel, for me, sexualized as much as like other words connected to the breast. It feels motherly. And so I said, let's put it to our like circle of women that we have in our life. And they were like, they all said what I said. And they said, no, it's the mother. We was like, what do you think of the bosom? Just tell us the first words that come to your mind. They were like, the mother energy, you're both mothers. That hug feeling come into my arms.
Yeah.
Like, just a space of holding space. And I was like, boom, it's the bosom. Your little joke backfired on you. And she, so that was kind of it. And then we didn't get the space, because what we wanted to do was kind of do it maybe more of a collective of women to come together, because the rent was very, very high. So we wanted to be realistic and not break ourselves. And that didn't manifest. And then my mum saw the one we're in now. And yeah, we got this space in April last year, and it's just been amazing ever since. So we just decided to combine our businesses together. So we're known as the Bosom, but we in ways have you know, our own businesses within it. But it's basically my mum, you know, she's a healer. She teaches people Reiki. She's a Reiki master, so she teaches. And then I do my healing, and we do lots of protective stuff. We do classes, and then we do an event called the Bosom Buddies, which is like a free event where the aim is come, even if you don't have a friend to come with, so that you can make a bosom buddy. So we do them sort of at the moment quarterly. And then it's just like, the aim is that it's a space that everyone can use, so you can hire it. We've had loads of other people's events here. You can also come and, you know, say you want to write, and we're not using the space. We set aside hours that people can come and do their writing here, or anything that you need to, if you just want to work away from home, you can use it as a workspace. So it's a little vibe. It's something that's blossoming.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, we're both very, my mum grew up in the 70s. I'm obsessed with the 70s. So it's very much got the 60s, 70s vibe. Very inspired by Bieber and things like that from the past. So we just created it, did it literally in a week, like no joke. Like found it, and then we was in a week, and then we were doing our launch like within sort of 3 weeks. So it was one of those taking a big risk, everything like down to like the money not fully being there kind of thing, and then just being there. And then, so it was meant to be. It was one of those. Synchronized.
So where is it in Ealing?
This is in Park Royal, Acton, sort of North Acton, between North Acton and Park Royal. It's just, it's called, the space that we're a part of is called Wow Space, but the Bosom is in Unit 3. So, it's lovely.
So if people want to see you, do you do online as well, don't you?
Yeah, I do both. I have international clients, and I always have done. I have online as an option as well. Also, just like, you know, mums and stuff who haven't got that space to like get here, get back. And, you know, I've got clients from Essex, I've got clients from Manchester, I've got clients from all over the place. So, online is definitely it's a fix in that. That's how we got through the pandemic. So, you know, without that, we would have gone under, both me and my mum separately. So online is an option, and then the in-person stuff, yeah, I have, like, I've got two clients today, so yeah, they'll come in person.
Yeah. And are you doing dancing things?
Yeah, so Wild Grace is a very hard, it's a hard one to describe, because it's like I said, mentioning earlier, it's connected to my childhood, really. So it took me a long time to recognise that was a part of healing. So
yeah,
there is science behind it. I'm rubbish at knowing that. But basically, between your muscles and I think the fascia, I think it's called, but
yep,
there's like this... the movement that you make moves the cells and things, and trauma is in your cells when you've gone through deep traumas or any form of pain, really. It all goes into a place of memory, and your cells are that, they hold it. So I got shown by spirit that I would help with that in some way, and I was like, well, I'm not going back to school, so I don't know how. And they were like, no, you've already got it, you just need to get your confidence up. So I did a fair bit of plant medicine to get to that point of sort of seeing myself just dancing freely with people, and so that's where Wild Grace was born. So basically what I've always done is put certain music on to connect to whatever part I'm feeling disconnected from. So sometimes, yeah, if I'm feeling disconnected to my masculine, I'll just put garage on and I'll just like, just dance, like kind of quite tribal, more so than like sort of the generic way of like being in a club dancing to garage. Don't do that as well, that works as well. But I've always found pockets of music that just tap into what I need. So my inner child likes musical theatre and Disney, so I will dance around to that like a Disney princess. I will dance around when I'm feeling more sexual or sensual, I'll find those musics that kind of bring that out. And then Wild Grace kind of goes hand in hand with another thing that I kind of touch base on, of sacred rage, which is, you know, our anger and holding space for that. And sometimes when I'm angry, dance has been what's got me out and then got me back to my joy or back to my happiness, and recognizing it's not as bad as it seems and it's okay.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it will not intensify it, but bring it up so much that it's like, okay, now I've got the courage to say what I need to say or do what I need to do to change that. So Wild Grace is a movement. It's a dance class that isn't a dance class, so you're not doing no routine. I have a whole flow. I get my DJ to make a flow of music that's all based in different sections of what I feel it needs to be integrated into us. I focus on women, because we don't have as many safe spaces. I just feel like you need a space that you're safe to embrace your sexual side, your sensual side,
yep,
your masculine, you know, without sort of masculine eyes on you, sort of just taking, yep, one judgment away, because you're already dealing, yep, with it, because it doesn't take away all judgments, because you're already dealing with getting over yourself, firstly, of like,
yeah,
thinking people are looking at you in the session. You know, everyone's there for themselves, but everyone starts thinking, oh my God, I can't do that because that person might think. And it's like, so there's a section in it where I encourage you to close your eyes, so you just lose yourself, like just trust that everyone in the room, his eyes is closed, only I'm watching and you're safe. And then always by the end of it, they're, you know, they would smile at each other, take each other in, and there's no judgment. But that feminine, you know, the toxic feminine that's out there, it's a, yeah, space where we explore that, but I don't encourage it. And
yeah,
I'm very firm with, like, if I see it or I feel it, I'm going to ask you to leave, you know, like, I feel no way about things like that, because I think,
yeah,
we have to call out behavior. Now, saying that, that's never shown up in my session, but it's just there as a standpoint.
Yeah.
If I see or feel, yeah, any of that, I'm gonna ask you to leave, because unless you're willing to work through that insecurity internally rather than externally,
yeah,
the class isn't for you. It won't work. It will just intensify what you're already doing. So, yeah, it's a hard one to describe.
So where do you do these?
So this one, I used to do them at the Bosom, but the Bosom isn't as large as I would like. I can only,
yeah,
do a few people at a time, or really and truly, at the bosom, I prefer it just one-on-one client, like one-to-one.
Yeah.
But I outsource, so I will be at the Wellsies in Peckham, which is, I think, the third or fifth floor, I can't remember, of Peckham Levels. So it's in South London, the first one. And then what my aim is to do one a month, but in different locations, so that I will... So I'm going to do South first, and I don't know why, but... because I'm a West girl, you'd think I'd make my life easier and just do it closer to me, but I just was drawn to that it has to be in South. But I think it's more like starting at the bottom and sort of working up. So the next one will be sort of more West base, North, East. So I'm just going to constantly dot around, and then if it takes me out to the country, like other places in the country, that's the aim, like to just outsource and you know, that was a humbling experience of being like, I've got a space, why can't I do it in my space? But it's like, your space isn't big enough, and the community's everywhere. It's not just like in your space. So,
so
Wellsies and Peckham in Peckham is where the first one's going to be. And then, it will hopefully be a monthly thing. And then we'll be doing it outside come the summer months, so that it will be a bit more, it's like another layer to the confidence building, because like, you're going to dance in public, like, but those will be sort of like in more central London parks and stuff like that, where we can just rock up and just jam. So yeah,
I love it. Thank I'm definitely you. Gonna come to one.
Yeah It'll be fun.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for coming on to talk to me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's been lovely, and I'll post all of your links, obviously.
Amazing.
For people
thank
to
you.
Get in touch with you.
Thank you.
But yeah.
Oh, I appreciate
it.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Hi. Yeah, so that was the lovely Amber. We'll post links to her if you want to get in touch and book a session with her. I didn't make the dance day that she did, but we're definitely going to go to one. So I'll share the next one when she does it, because it looked absolutely amazing. But yeah, she's very much about female empowerment and loving your body, and I'm very much for all that stuff. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you're well. I hope you escaped the storm safely. There's a new episode of the Epic Mum Chat out on YouTube. If you just search Epic Mum Chat in YouTube, this one's called Bumholes. Our last one was called Sex, Porn and Bestiality, because we do touch on these subjects, but it got over 1,000 views, I think, because a lot of people were obviously searching for sex, porn or bestiality in YouTube, and got our video, which was definitely not what they wanted to watch. But check that out. This one's funny. It's just about being a mum, basically, because you see a lot of bum holes when you're a mother. Enjoy, stay safe, stay sane. Big love to you. Please subscribe, please share, and I'll see you next week. Big up. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.